We acknowledge the traditional owners and custodians of the land on which Company has been recorded, the Whadjuk people of the Noongar Nation.
We respect their continuing culture and the past and present contributions they have made to this region. Sovereignty was never ceded.
You're listening to Company, the podcast connecting Australian artists,
where we talk all things professional, personal and spiritual.
Joining you as always are your hosts Georgia Kennedy
and Tiana Catalano. Hello and welcome back to Company for episode 11.
We're super stoked for this one. We got to speak to three amazing ex-WAPA grads who have been doing some awesome stuff this year in the musical theatre scene.
Yeah, and it's the first time we've ever done a group interview. And we may have come up with some technical difficulties. So if you can hear any muffle in the background or distortion, unfortunately, we just had to record through Zoom on the day. But still, it's a banger interview. I think it's one of my favorites. It was so much fun and moving and so insightful. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited for you guys to hear it.
Yeah, me too, absolutely. It was such a fun interview and such like a lovely mix of having a laugh and talking about the amazing things that they've been up to this year, the initiatives they've been a part of, the work they did to, you know, change the Rob Guest Endowment, essentially. So we spoke about all of that and we touched on something that I have sort of touched on with other people of colour in terms of being, you know, being the daughter of an immigrant father. And I spoke about sort of growing up and having a protective father that maybe didn't want me to pursue something like this because on the outset it looked hard. But I have to say now that he is the most supportive dad in the world and I couldn't be where I am today without his support over my time at WAPA and before that as well. So shout out to my dad. I love you very much.
Shall we do our riff?
Yeah, let's do our riff.
Riff of the week.
Shut up, David.
Okay, I'll go first. I've started watching The Queen's Gambit on Netflix. It's one of those shows that kept being recommended to me on the Netflix sort of homepage. I'm about 4 episodes in. It is really brilliant. It's about this girl who grew up in an orphanage and both her parents died, and she is an incredible chess player, and it's about her journey as a chess player and how obsessed she becomes with chess and how it becomes her whole world and becomes her coping mechanism for her life. But it's really brilliant. It's set in the 50s. The lighting and design and the costumes are amazing. So I would definitely recommend watching The Queen's Gambit. I'm really enjoying it so far. The acting is phenomenal and yeah, it's a great one.
I don't know how you watch so many TV shows. When do you find the time?
Late at night with my boyfriend. It's the time that we spend together is to watch shows. Or I do it when I'm like cleaning or making food or washing the dishes, stuff like that.
Yeah, see, I can't do that. I can't multitask and watch something because like 10 minutes will go by and I'll be like, I don't know what just happened in those 10 minutes if I'm doing something else. But podcast, I can do because it's not a visual thing. It's just right, in my ears. Yeah. I don't know why. Anyway. My riff is I'm not really like suggesting anyone to watch this. It was funny. On Halloween, a couple of girlfriends and I decided instead of going out and partying that we would go get pizza and then go see like an old 80s horror film. And it was so, so funny. Like the horror films of the 80s/90s are just so bad. And we were just laughing the whole time. And it was meant to be like fully serious. It was like Evil Dead 2. And there's this one part where the guy's hand got possessed by this spirit. So it started attacking him. And it just reminded me of Jim Carrey in Liar Liar. Do you know that scene where he's got the pen and he's like, no, because he's like trying to lie and write it down his hand, like, oh, it was just so funny. So if you feel like having a bit of a laugh, go watch some 80s horror films. They, God bless, are just terrible. They're just really bad, but such a good laugh. So that's my riff.
Nice. Jared Dreyfer, Shannon Alice Kwan, and Lyndon Watts have been an amazing and integral part of the musical theatre BIPOC movement this year. Not only have they been leaders of change through the making of The Quarter, they have also been integral in speaking up about the Rob Guest Endowment this year, and they have been such amazing leaders within the musical theatre industry, and we were so lucky to be able to talk to them.
If you would like to see their full bios, you can head to the description in the episode. But just for reference, you may have recently seen Jared in Catch Me If You Can at the Hayes Theatre, Shannon as a swing on Six the Musical, and Lyndon in the latest tour of West Side Story.
Hello, Lyndon, Shannon, and Jared. We are so happy to have you on the podcast. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Yay. Our first group interview. So this will be fun. We're super stoked. Now, we like to start every interview with asking you what your arts recommendations are. So we might go around and do like a little quick fire and ask you what you've been listening to or reading to or watching at the moment.
Okay. I get so nervous about these questions for some reason. I think like I just feel like people are going to judge what I'm watching or listening to. But hey, that's a me problem. Most recently, I binged the entire series of The Office again.
UK or US?
US. I'm a US, big US fan. The UK one's a bit too cringy for me. I also have like been reading a lot. I literally can't think of any books right now off the top of my head. She's nervous. Why am I so nervous? And also The Silence of Zoom. Like, makes me panic. We can cut this out.
I've got this.
I don't know what else I've been listening to or watching. I've had a blank. Maybe let's
see. I love The Office and Paint by Numbers. Your beautiful Paint by Numbers that you shared us before is stunning. So
oh my God, thank you so much.
We love that. What about you, Jared? What have you been up to listening to?
So since COVID hit, I reckon all in all, I've watched like maybe 35 TV shows. Like, I honestly think I've watched everything that I've ever really wanted to watch, especially like at Whopper, not having enough time. I came back and I was like, no, this is the time to do it. So in the first kind of month, I binged quite a few things, but my most recent thing that I just binged in like a couple of days, I was late to the party, but Schitt's Creek. And that has like sent me to another planet. I sobbed about 75 times and laughed my head off. So that was good. And other things that I've watched, another show called Succession. There's a really great Australian actress called Sarah Snook in that. And she's awesome. And that show is so cool. Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, loved that. That was a classic. I highly recommend that if you want something of like the comedy genre, very good acting too. And also I just watched The Boys in the Band on Netflix and I loved it. It was a play on Broadway. It's got like an all-star cast. It's awesome. So highly recommend watching that. Very important, very strong messages, graphic and all that kind of stuff. And it's great. So that's kind of, and I also got a vinyl machine. So a record player, a vinyl machine. So I've just been like listening to vinyls is so therapeutic for me. And I feel like that sound is second to none. So I've just been listening to that.
Beautiful. That's
me.
Yeah, there's something about having that effort of having to like turn it over, or it's like, oh, it's the end already. Now what am I going to listen to? And thinking about it rather than just like popping a playlist on. I love that.
Yeah,
I love that. And what about you, Lyndon?
ISO for me has been mostly music. Hey, a lot of music and podcasts. I've always listened to podcasts, but it's really been like people talking about different stuff has really helped me distract my mind, just kind of detach from the roughness that this time period has been. So a lot of podcasts like Las Culturistas. Ooh, excuse me, just dropped a brush on my foot. Las Culturistas, which is an American podcast. what other podcast? Sibling Rivalry, which is Bob the Drag Queen and Monet Exchange, is like one of my favorites. And a lot of music as well. Like, yeah, pushing my music boundaries has been a bit of a nice little hobby, little joy for the last couple of months as well. A lot of music.
So the next question we wanted to ask is, what performance or art has moved you or inspired you? Or was there a pivotal moment growing up that made you go, this is what I want to do, and this is the community that I want to be a part of?
Yeah, I mean,
I remember. Oh yeah, Gushan.
Goodness. I have an answer for this one. My God. The first thing that I watched growing up that made me go, oh, I really want to do this, even though I was already at YABC with Lyndon and we were doing our little training, I watched this musical called Once We Lived Here, which is by Matt Frank and Dean Bryant. And I saw that when I was 14. And it was the first show that I saw that wasn't so much about like the glitz and glamour and like a high kick and like belting your highest note. It was very much just like investigating relationships and interpersonal stuff. And I was like, oh, this is hard hitting. This makes people feel. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I want to do that.
I don't know if there really was a moment where I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I kind of fell into it very strangely. My friends were going to audition for a show and I just thought I would go along and try it out. And then I got the part and then I just haven't ever stopped. And I'm lucky that I have parents that have fostered that ability as well and have kind of been like, no, that's what you need to do. But I mean, in terms of things that I've seen that has changed me, I saw Miss Saigon on the West End and that changed me big time. It was such a spectacle, but at the same time, like, so intimate that it kind of blew my mind. And funny enough, I took my best friend and she is like so far removed from theater world, and it was her first musical that she'd ever seen, and by the end of it was just like sobbing in floods of tears, just like, she loved him so much. And so that was a nice experience to share. So I think that's why that changed me, and the power of what that stuff can do. But I mean, while I was at Whopper, I got to do some great scenes from some great plays, like The Normal Heart by Larry Kramer. And that play really changed my life and my perspective. Also, I saw a play by Maine Wyatt last year, Fields of Gold. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's that monologue that he did that was kind of going viral around the internet, and I was lucky enough to see that, and that blew my mind. So those are a few things that have kind of shaped me, if you will.
The biggest one I remember was Cynthia Erivo in The Color Purple on Broadway. It was kind of at the time where I was questioning in my like career. I was like, what do I want? What do I want from this? What do I want to do? Am I doing this for a lot of money? Am I doing this to have a big profile? Like, I was just trying to figure out like what's their end game sort of thing. And I realized that what I basically want to do from that performance, I basically, you know, from the way that it made me feel, and I saw that it made that audience feel, which is something that I've never witnessed in my life. It was literally a spiritual experience. The way that people reacted in that theater, it's just the peak of human reaction and how strongly human beings can connect and resonate with art, the way that people reacted. It was just like every like land, like peak of the human spectrum of, I mean, it was like, we were tearful, we were joyful, we were angry, we were confused, we laughed. Like, it was just, it hit so many different parts of my heart and spirit. And so I walked out of that theater knowing that that's what I wanted to do. I want to travel the world and make people, you know, feel things, like Shannon said before, just basically just like tell stories and whatever else happens around that. It was nice to finally have like a bit of clarity around like, oh, this is why I'm doing it. It's to take people to church, basically.
Yeah, whenever I feel a bit disconnected from my art or I'm not really sure why I'm doing what I'm doing, I'll watch Cynthia Erivo in The Color Purple, or I'll listen to her sing I'm Here, and I'll lose the plot again, and I'll go, okay, this is why I'm here. This is why I want to do this. I want to be able to tell stories like she tells stories.
Another
question we like to ask is, when things go wrong, do you guys have any funny mishap stories while performing?
Yes. Short answer, yes.
The one that I've brought to the table happened while I was at Whopper. I think it was in third year, I'm not sure. But me and a guy in my year, Patrick Whitbread, were asked to sing You're Gonna Love Tomorrow, that quartet, Lyndon, stop, from Follies with two other people. And so I don't even know the show that well, but there's like two couples. So me and Patrick were a couple and we sung like the first part of the song and then the other couple takes over and then it's like a quartet moment. During our first couple bit, we'd choreographed this like kiss in. Also, this is for like this girl's piano recital, like her end of course, last thing that she's doing to get her like final marks. Like it's this really big deal. So we're singing this song and we'd choreographed in this kiss moment and for some reason, I was like smiling when we were meant to be kissing. So Patrick kissed my teeth and then we just couldn't sing. Like we literally could not sing. Like we were just standing there. This woman is playing. It's her piano recital and we cannot get words out. We're like shaking, laughing to just silence. It's like an instrumental moment now. And then the other couple takes over and then the quartet moment, we still can't do it. Like we can't look at each other. Patrick has like started like hugging me from behind, like the classic couples hug pose. And we're just standing there shaking, laughing, still unable to sing. It finishes. We like go sit down and listen to the rest of this recital. And then at the end, DK, who was head of the course at the time, comes up to Patrick and goes, "Ah, good job, Patty," as if it was all fine.
Oh my god.
I think it's my finest moment. It's my peak.
Good job, wow. Patty. Oh my god.
Also, I didn't realize at these piano recitals nobody applauds. So like we'd had a lead up of
do you think you deserved applause for that performance, Shannon? were you waiting for a standing ovation or
waiting for something to break the silence? But there was this build up as well, because before it got to this like music theater section, she'd done all of these like operetta numbers that had just ended and no one was applauding, and like Patrick and I had like gone to applaud in silence, and it's just this like build up of like, I don't know, stress and anticipation. Horrible.
Classic MTs like causing a ruckus.
Apologies to Simone for ruining your end of course recital.
Mine's quite recent. So it was when I was doing Catch Me If You Can at the Hayes. And I don't know if you guys know the show, but there's that big number, Don't Break the Rules, big hectic dance number. Anyway, I split my pants like from like bottom to top. Like I had purple undies on. It was all out on show. So we finished and I did the dance number and was like, okay, I'll change them quickly. When I run off the stage, I'll change them quickly. I don't know what possessed me in that moment because I had to be in the next scene like 10 seconds later. So I run off stage thinking I'm going to like, yeah, I've got this. I'm going to change my pants. And the Hayes dressing room is like upstairs. So I'm going to have to run up the stairs, change these pants, like get this off. I don't know what possessed me. But then I was halfway through changing my pants, so I had nothing on. And then the stage manager goes, "Jared, you're meant to be on the stage, Jared." And then my mic's on and I go, "Oh, fuck that." And over the whole auditorium is just me going, "Oh, fuck that." And then I run out. I didn't have a tie on. Don't ask me why. I just like took everything off. I had no shoes on. my pants were like half around my ankles. And I just ran out and I just said my line. I was going to improvise and just be like, "I just came from the toilet or something." But I thought if I did that, I would have sent the rest of the other people to another planet. So I just went with it and I was mortified, but now I can laugh about it. So fuck that.
Oh, that is hilarious.
It's the no shoes for me.
Yeah, I don't know.
Unexplained as well. The audience is probably just like, an interesting choice. Yeah. Interesting. Directional choice.
I don't know what possessed me in that moment because I knew I had to be on the stage. And I was panic. Like, no, I can get it. I can get it done. I'll get it done. No, he did not get it done.
Was it like a detective scene as well? Yeah. Like you're meant to be one of the detectives?
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yes, it was.
That is so funny.
So that's my story.
Yes. Love that.
Amazing. Mine is, I'm actually just tossing up in my head between one and another, and I'm just trying to decide. I'll go with this one. This one is from Aladdin, when I was on for Jafar. There's a reveal, and it's pretty straightforward, but even with the straightforward things, all it takes is one little thing to happen different, and it's the entire thing. Like, that's how that these kind of costume changes obviously work. It's just like, just so much room for error. And this one, I was hunched over, in full costume, but with basically like an old beggar sheet over me, kind of like just doing hand acting. And then it's meant to be a big reveal, and I stand upright, and it's like, oh wow, it was Jafar the whole time. So the reveal happens, and the cape is ripped off my head, and also comes off my turban. And so there's this 6 foot Jafar stand next to Iago, who's holding Jafar's cape, and my hat, my turban has rolled off, and it's rolled halfway across the stage. So I'm standing there in a bald cap in Jafar drag with all this makeup on, and just in a bald cap and a microphone on my forehead. This is the first time I'm going on for this cover. And it just like, and it's just, there's so much going on at that point. Like, it's just at the kind of the start of Jafar's, like, the busy part of his show kind of kicks off, and it's just like, it was the worst way to start the first time going for the cover, because I was just like, this is an uphill battle as it is, and I just started in the worst possible way. I am snatched bald on stage in front of hundreds of people. Like, it was so embarrassing. And I'm standing across from Ainsley, and he's just like being a true professional, keeping it a straight face and being in the scene. But my God, I wanted to sink into the floor. It was terrible. Oh my God. Mortifying. And just having to sing a song after that is just like, oh God, can we just start this over again?
Wait, did you sing the song just in the wig cap?
No, I can't remember how it resolved itself. Algin, who was playing Iago, was brilliant. So I'm pretty sure he at one point grabbed it, handed it to me, and I put it on my hand, but the damage was done. They'd seen behind the wall. They knew.
It's just the setup for me of, you're meant to be this like intimidating, powerful figure.
Literally meant to be a powerful reveal. It's meant to be like, ooh, it was him the whole time, and I just was in a wig cap. It was good times.
Oh my God. That reminds me of, we just did a chorus line a couple of weeks ago, and it's the one finale, and everyone has to look absolutely amazing in their like specky silver costumes and their top hats. And I'm waiting on the side because I come in at the very end, and like our set was like VHS tape. Like, it was like these long strings of like VHS tape at the back, which are kind of meant to look like shimmer curtains. But if you move, they like swish out really far. So everyone's like coming and doing like their one positions, and the VHS tape just like swings out so far. And there are people at the back going like, and like trying to get it out and like panicking in their like costumes and trying to look really professional, like spitting VHS tape on the stage floor.
And didn't someone get caught in it as well? Their leg got caught, like, so they were like doing their round the circle and their legs just like caught in it.
It sounds perfect. You're describing it like it's a bad thing. I think this is the funniest thing. Potentially the funniest thing to ever happen on the stage. It sounds great.
Yeah. And I'm just smiling from the side like, guys, you got this. We wanted to talk to you today because you all are ex-WAPA grads, and we were lucky enough to have a chat with you a couple of months ago as WAPA grads about sort of what you have been doing in the industry in this year and the change that you have been enacting, and you've all been so integral in really changing the landscape of the musical theatre scene, I think, this year. It's been incredible. And I guess we just wanted to start off by asking you what drew you to be a part of this movement and use your voices to create change in our industry?
Yeah, seeing younger performers not afforded the same opportunities that I felt like I had been left out of really just struck a chord with me. And I think with the pandemic hitting and people being more on social media and just more on their phones and more in touch with keeping tabs on what's happening really afforded change and momentum to occur. And I think just really trying to tap into people's humanity and empathy in regards to our industry, but also just social change in general. Yeah, but I think that that Rob Guest endowment moment was sort of the catalyst for it, or at least a good example of the kinds of opportunities that that aren't afforded to everyone.
Yeah, so for me, it was about finding a way to create space for younger people, especially in the, you know, age group of 18 to 25 that were directly affected by the Rob Guest endowment. And I guess coming from that, I also then started to think about, you know, for me, my role models on the stage growing up never reflected who I was. They were always white men, if you will, that were leading main stage companies. Because, I mean, when you think about it, when have you ever seen an Aboriginal man lead a main stage company? That, to me, was a penny that dropped, especially during the Rob Guest endowment time. And so it kind of made me go, okay, I'm going to do everything in my power to be that for someone else on and off the stage, because I haven't had that for myself. So I guess it's about creating the opportunities and allowing, you know, younger generations to see that this is a viable career option for them. There is space for them, because, you know, too far often we're told that there isn't space for us here. There's no room. There's no roles for us. There's no place, because it's predominantly a white driven industry. That's just kind of the blatant truth of it. So I really wanted to also give a voice to the First Nations people of this country, because that has been far too long overlooked by a lot of people. So I really wanted to take the opportunity to do that. And it's given me a higher purpose, I think, in terms of what this industry is for me, because, like, now I could really care less about the shows and the roles and all that kind of stuff that I do. I love to do it and it's awesome and thankful when I do. But for me, it's given me the purpose to go, okay, let's create the opportunities for everyone else that hasn't had those opportunities. And if that means me not having opportunity, great. I don't care, as long as I can give them to someone else because they haven't been afforded that. I just think it's the power that young people have, especially in 2020 and coming off the bat of the Rob Guest endowment and seeing the way that young people have kind of stepped up, you know, both people of color and our white counterparts. And I kept saying to people, you know, this is an opportunity for us to take this and shape it into what we want our industry to be. Because in, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, we'll be the ones behind the desk. So why not start now in changing it in what we want it to be? So that's kind of been my reasoning for really going hard and being involved as much as I can.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's been amazing having, you know, you guys, but also everyone else who's been leading this for us as students to have empowerment to start making changes within the university now. As people who aren't really in power, we've banded together even to be like, no, actually, we don't want to tolerate that because we want the industry to change and that needs to start here. So, yeah, it's amazing what we can do when we have, you know, not leaders, but, you know, like seeing industry people do it, we're like, oh, hell yeah. Like, we're all in this together. So, yeah, really cool.
Totally. I agree with that. And it's like also seeing young people speak up, other young people go, oh, I have a voice. I can use my voice. I don't have to succumb to the powers that be out of fear that I'm going to, you know, not get a job or XYZ, you know, that it's an empowering thing to use your voice rather than it being a diminishing thing. And I also think that, like, diverse storytelling is truthful storytelling. Like, that's our country is diverse, and that's not represented on the stage at the moment, especially in music theatre. especially in music theatre, because you walk down the street and there's it's so diverse, you don't know what to do with yourself. And then you look on the stage and you go, oh, that's not what I see out there. So it's trying to change that and getting the ball rolling in being able to change that and make the opportunity accessible to everyone.
Individually, we're all still figuring out ourselves the best way to express our experiences. You know, it's been very much a learning curve for me, and I can only really speak for myself, because I think for so long it's been implied, even if it hasn't been explicitly said, that they don't want to hear from us, that our experiences don't matter, that they don't hold any weight or value. And I think we're all coming into this like joint awareness that they do, and that by sharing it, like Jared, you were saying, it almost creates this like snowballing effect of everyone coming together and lending their own experiences as well.
Yeah, I think having this, I think community has been a big sort of realization for me, that I do have a community of people of color. I think being here in Perth, or growing up, I wasn't really cognizant of the fact that I wasn't represented. I was just sort of like, well, this is the way that it is, and I didn't actually really think about it until this year, when people started speaking up and I had to start speaking up for myself. And I felt really alone in that at WAPA, and I felt like I was one of the only people that was speaking up. And then this movement happened and people started talking about the Rob Guest Endowment, and then a community was brought forward to me that I didn't know that existed. And that is so powerful and so special. And I just want to thank you all for being a part of that and for really creating this sense of community and change. Mm. Sure.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Personally, this sort of stuff, it's, this year's been like obvious statement of the fucking century, but this year has been a big one for me. I mean, like 2 months before the Rob Guest kind of all went down, I was having a conversation with my friend Ella, and I was like, the struggle of representation in music theater and storytelling and POC and Black and First Nations people represented on stage in music theater for me has been something that I've been cognizant and talking about to myself and a very, very small, you know, group of people for as long as I can remember, because this has been my life. Like, this is, you know, growing up doing YBC with Shannon, it's like I've always felt like there's been something not connecting, because I was seeing myself work really hard, and even as, you know, as a kid growing up and then turning into an adult, whatever, I saw myself working really, really quite hard. And I will say, you know, during university, you know, I was one of the more diligent workers in the class, and not more talented, not more deserving, just consistently at it. And I was seeing, I expected this kind of thing to stop when I got to WAPA. I thought it was just kind of a Geelong thing or a YBC thing or just a pre-uni thing. I thought once I got to WAPA, this casting stuff would sort itself out, and I would be given opportunities to play lead roles like Tony and Frank in Merrily We Roll Along. I thought because I was hardworking enough and talented and tenacious and kind-hearted that I would be given those opportunities. And I realised that wasn't the case. I realised that no matter how hard I worked, there would always be situations I would find myself in where people who weren't working as hard would be awarded above me, when people who wouldn't appreciate the experience as much were given the opportunity over me as well. And this is not this is not singular to my experience. This is something that I'm sure both Jared and Shannon and you guys have experienced in different ways. The experience of, as a POC, working as hard as you humanly can and still being overlooked. That was a pattern that I was no longer willing to accept, and have never been willing to accept, but I've just had no choice but to live with. So when this conversation came up around the Rob Guest Endowment, which has happened for the last 6 years, I've been talking about this for a while, having been in the top six. You know, it's always these conversations have always happened, because these situations have always happened. The situations of a POC or a Black person being overlooked is a really well-trodden out, tired trope that I've lived many times myself. So to be able to have see a clear opportunity to disrupt that pattern, it would have been irresponsible of me to not do everything I could have. And as Shannon said, I don't have all of the answers. I barely have any of them. I'm just going off instinct, gut impulse, listening to people that I respect and have things to offer me. So, and that's where the community comes into it. We've all learned off each other. We've all learned to be sensitive from each other. We've learned all learned to be strong from each other. And this time is, it's obviously time for a shift. I think it was clear to everyone, Black, white, POC, or otherwise, it's just we all knew that this there was a change happening during this time. And I knew that this is something that if I'm going to struggle with it for my entire life, which is what I have struggled with it with this for, I needed to be a part of the change if I had something genuine to offer, which it turns out I did. And so I was very proud to be able to change that or make that change, or, you know, to take some steps that were are going to lead to some real systemic change in this industry, which is a small one, but this is people's livelihoods and people's art and people's love. So we all deserve to get equal representation and equal opportunities. So that's what we're all fighting for younger generations of brown and black and First Nations kids to see themselves and to be accepted and to feel safe, because this system sometimes feels like it's really set against you. So if I can do something to make that more hospitable and joyful and easy for someone, I had no choice. I must.
Yeah, and that's been a big learning for me as well, because I think growing up with an immigrant father, I was always told not to pursue this because I don't see any people like you in these shows. I don't think you're going to, where are you going to get money? How are you going to, what do you mean? How are you going to make this work? Which came from a place of love, and even talking about the Black Lives Matter movement.
Protection. They're trying to protect you.
Yeah. And talking about, you know, these movements that are happening in the Black Lives Matter movement. And my dad goes, of course, that's my life. What do you mean? Of course, this has been this has been going on forever and ever and ever and ever. And so I think for me personally, I'm not sure about any of you, but I really got bogged down in the weight and the heaviness of that and of these movements and everything that they mean and they hold. And so I really personally am trying to find the joy now and the joy in this movement and the joy that we can find through change. And I see that in all of you. You all hold space for the heaviness and, you know, the gravity of this movement, but you also hold a lot of space for joy and love and light. And that's really beautiful. And I really appreciate that. Yeah.
I think that's a survival instinct to pair. You know, we all felt the weight of this time. Like, it's just heavy, is this the only word? It just felt like we were just bearing this terrible fucking ordeal all on our shoulders, and we all felt it. You could just, in all those Zoom meetings, like, I mean, if this is the last Zoom meeting I ever do, I'll be happy, because Zoom has been a direct portal to misery for me for the last 6 months. Every time I'm on a Zoom chat, those chats were really, those really hard, like holding space was, it took a lot of energy. So like to invert it and to have chats like this where we're on Zoom again, but we're talking about joy, we're talking about moving forward. That's kind of the way forward. We can't say, yes, we have been victims to denigration and to being excluded because of the color of our skin, but we're not going to fall victim to that. We're going to survive it, and we're going to push through it, and we're going to create art from it. We're going to better ourselves from it. We're going to grow from it. We're going to, you know, to have chats like this and help people find the other side of it, to find the joy. And we're fighting so we can do our art and share our art. So getting to that point, remembering, you know, Vidya said a lot, like, when do I get to be an artist again? And like, I feel like that's so special. Like, we all deserve to be artists. We don't have to be activists 24/7. It's about finding balance and ingratiating it into your day-to-day life, so it becomes a joyful, gentle practice rather than an aggressive 2 month period where you feel like you don't look up from your phone and you are depressed constantly. It's time to move past that. And it's time to, this is the next step. We're experiencing the next stage of it, I think.
I think so. And I think through going through all of this together, and as much as it's sort of resurfaced past traumas, as well as just dealing with, you know, the situations at hand, sort of through that, you know, you feel so isolated experiencing these things, and you can't help but feel that way. But there's been so many, you know, generous givings of people's stories of them feeling a similar way, and other people being like, I felt that too, you know, and there's that reinvigorated closeness within the BIPOC communities that we're seeing because of this. And I think there's a lot of joy within that, as well as comfort and just sort of moving through to heal ourselves and healing ourselves together.
Yeah, and I find the beauty of the BIPOC community is that all of our stories are so similar, but yet so different. So for me, I am learning so much at the same time while also sharing a similar experience with someone. So, you know, my experience as an Indigenous man is completely different to Shan's and to Lyndon's, but I am learning so much from their experience, and we have this commonality between us that we are able to sit there and go, I get it. I get you. I see you. I hear you. And that for me has been the most important thing, to feel heard. Because far too often, you know, you go through these things and it's just suppress, put it down, don't deal with it, because no one understands. No one around you will get it. It will be back. It'll be your problem, you know, it'll be put back on you in some sort of way. So now for these things to, for the Rob guest to be a catalyst in all these things coming back to light, that was really hard. But to have people around that were going through the exact same thing was second to none for me. It was a joy to find a community in such tragedy.
Yeah. And yeah, can I say, just like as a person who doesn't identify as a person of color, and I've just been listening to a lot of stories and stuff, and it's so powerful to hear all of your stories. And I have a friend who's not involved in the theatre at all, but never would have known of her history as a child coming from the Cook Islands, and how she lost her native tongue because her grandparents said, no, you will suffer in Australia if you speak your native tongue. You need to speak English, you know, and hearing her story, and like, it just came out of the movement, you know. She only felt like she could talk about it because of the movement. And she's like, the joy for me now is that I'm going to teach my daughter the native tongue, and we're going to go back and see our family, and I'm not going to be ashamed to say I'm from the Cook Islands, or to accept her saying I'll marry when she's not. But they just don't, you know, take the care to know where she's from. She's like, no, that's not going to happen for my daughter. She is Cook Island, and they're going to know it. And I just like, yeah, it's incredible to see that. And I so appreciate everyone telling their stories and being so vulnerable like that, because it is so, yeah, as I said, powerful. And yeah,
So we'll go from what we were talking about before, and wanted to ask you what you find most joyful about the BIPOC community within musical theatre.
I think it's that togetherness. I think it's, you know, there's less of that feeling that you can't express yourself truthfully and genuinely. That you don't feel like you have to restrict or edit yourself in community. Yeah, that's it for me.
Yeah, totally. I definitely feel that way as well. And again, I'll go back to, you know, being a young person, feeling empowered to speak my truth and tell my story. And then seeing, you know, my fellow young people, in inverted commas, come together and use their voices as well. That to me has been so inspiring.
Incredible.
It's just like, there's just so much joy within the BIPOC community as well, because I say often they're natural storytellers. We are natural storytellers. And when we get together and we have these conversations, you see that within these people. And that has been so fruitful for me to see, you know, people express themselves so genuinely. That I go, if they were given those opportunities, imagine what the stage would look like, you know, just from these conversations alone. So that the sense of community is, it's so powerful and it's joyful. And I feel like I've found a place, you know. I have never been the type of person I've never even thought to that I was boxed in being Aboriginal. Like, I never thought that that was a thing that would happen until I started experiencing these things. And then through the Rob Guest happening, looking back on things and going, oh, so that's what that was. I get it now. And not having to go through that alone and being able to share that with other people and them be receptive and share their experiences. So that for me has been so joyful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I think that for me, it's like I've always wanted to have like POC. For me, it's very important to like surround myself with POC and Black and queer, like, you know, energies. As the older I get, the more I want crave those in my life. And I think this community, this, you know, the quarter, this group of young people that have just, who are so ready to do this and so ready to show up and just need the opportunities to see them be vocal about it, you know, like I would have suffered in silence, you know, and I only, you know, I'm only like 4 years ahead of the current, you know, five or whatever, so years ahead of the current grads or whatever. And it's just like, things can change so quickly. And like when Shannon and I graduated, like things would, even in that short amount of time, things have shifted so much. And there are so many things that I swallowed and just sat on and just compartmentalized and internalized. And it really did a lot of harm to myself by not expressing concerns, by not thinking that anyone wanted to hear it or was interested, was feeling the same thing. So I think the most beautiful thing about this moment is that we're connecting and we're realizing, oh, those awful things that have happened to me have always also happened to other people. And in that, there is an alleviation, is that the word? Of stress, of hurt, because it's, you know, it's shared pain. So we, and in that is joy, in that is celebration. So we come together and there's an already off the bat, you know, before you even start talking, there's a shared knowledge, there's a shared experience, which is in music theatre is quite rare. I've been in a lot of white rehearsals. So I look forward to seeing those rooms become more inclusive immediately. Not in the future, now.
Right.
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yesterday.
Yeah, and I guess we've kind of touched on it, but if you could give a piece of advice to your younger self or the young artists of today, what would it be?
I think for me, it's to lean into your individuality. I think for so long, I tried to make myself fit into the parameters of what's ideal for other people. And that's not what is ideal for me. And that's not my strength. So I think realizing the power in my own individuality and not being afraid to lean into that. Yeah.
100%.
Totally. What would I say? I would say, for starters, stay strong within yourself. Surround yourself with the people that cultivate you and make you feel good and are joyful. That's a huge thing that's been really major for me in terms of working out who I value in my life and who brings so much to me. I guess I would also say, you know, you are exactly where you need to be in this moment in time, and you're surrounded by the people that you need to be surrounded by, and you are doing what you're meant to be doing. So keep going.
Yeah, I think I just second what Shannon said. Just the sooner young people, especially the people affected by this kind of, I guess, people of color and Indigenous people in this industry, I would just say the sooner you step into your inherent unique nature and your somebodiness and the things that make you, it's just so painful to think that we live years of our life trying to diminish ourselves, alter ourselves to become something that we think that people are looking for. So the sooner you cut that shit out, the better your life, the better your work, the better your relationships, the sooner you allow yourself to be vulnerable and authentic, the better your life. And it might not make sense until it makes sense. Does that make sense? Like, you could have told me this 6 years ago and I'd be like, cool, that's a nice Oprah quote. But like, truly, just literally be yourself. I know it's like, it's scary because you think you're afraid of people not liking what you really are. But the thing is, if people are liking you and you're not being your genuine, authentic self, then they don't actually like you and they don't fuck with you. So you can go through 6 years of friendship and then one day step into your inherent uniqueness and who you are, and then you're no longer compatible with them because you pretended to be a different person for the last 6 years. So step into it now, be you, not just in your art, just you in general. And if people don't, that is the indication that they're not supposed to, they're not going to be in your fan club, babe. And that's okay. Not everyone has to like you. That's what I would tell myself.
Amen. Yeah.
That's right. Period.
Yeah.
That's
amazing. And we usually ask about what are your hopes for the Australian industry, but I think we've heard that, and we know the hopes, we know the dreams that we have for this industry, and I think it's really joyful now, and I feel the joy, and I want to thank you for bringing that joy to us into this conversation.
Yeah, I would like to say on that though, before we peace out, I think that it's really important that our entire industry continues to look at itself and its shortcomings and continue to grow, because I think often the tendency is to sort of put the problem on other people, on other companies or on other performers. And I think that if we all individually assess our choices and mistakes that we've made in the past, it will ensure genuine growth and reflection, so that the future is the one that we want to see and not a band-aid.
Yeah, for sure.
Totally. And I think it's not about just ticking a box and moving on. Like, there is no box to tick. This is active work all the time. You have to be able to put in the effort, because you can't just tick a box and move on. We don't have that choice, you know? So it's about really actively putting in the work and being an active ally, if you will.
And I think, you know, COVID sucks and wish it never happened, but it has been a really good time for people to listen and to actually engage. And I just really hope that that engagement continues. When everything does start to happen again, it needs to be continued, and with people like you and, you know, Georgia and, you know, allies and people coming into the industry, not tolerating what has come before, I think it's going to be a really good change.
100%.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Wicked. I just loved that interview so much. I laughed so much and just felt so grateful for the amazing people in our industry, and just like such a nice reminder that everyone's just human and we're all just trying to make it through life. And I just, wow. It was really, really inspiring.
Yeah, we're all just sort of making it up as we go. But even just speaking to them there, they're such incredible people. And I left the interview and I was like, I just want to squish your faces and give you hugs and meet you in real life. So we can't wait to do that soon once the borders open.
I know. But yeah, thank you so much. If you guys are listening, thank you so much again for that opportunity. And I highly suggest that you follow all three of them on Instagram. You can just find them under their names and see what stuff they're doing. They're doing amazing free workshops. They're posting things all the time, really nice like readings and content to be looking at. And
they're all just stupidly talented as well, so you can just go and watch them sing because they're incredible.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Company. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know on our Instagram at Company Pod or our Facebook page. Also make sure to leave a review on our iTunes or Spotify. Big shout out to myself, Dev Duketis, for producing this episode, our media queen, Deirdre Koo, also known as Deedle Dum Designs, and to the gorgeous Tiana and Georgia for letting me do this outro. See ya!
See ya!